up in verse 27 where we left off when the 14th night had come. So we are now 11 days past what we studied last week. For 11 days, they have been driven by this storm. Remember, they already started throwing cargo overboard. That's how desperate the situation had become. They wanted to make sure they weren't going to ground out on any sandbars, and so they begin lightening the ship so that it doesn't sit so deeply in the water. They're throwing out cargo. They're throwing out the ship's tackle. They are apparently saving a few things, but we're going to read here in just a little bit that they eventually get rid of everything on the boat to make it as light as possibly can. But for 11 days, they are sailing around in the Mediterranean with no way of knowing where they're going, because Luke tells us that for many days, they couldn't see where the sun was. They could track night and day, but they couldn't see exactly where the sun was, and they couldn't see any stars, which in the ancient world means we have no means of determining what direction we are even moving. Have you ever been out in the open ocean, tried to look around without the benefit of sun, moon, and stars and see which way you're going? Dan, it's kind of lonely out there in the middle of nothing, isn't it? Of course, you were on a submarine with how many people? I wouldn't say lonely was a word that fits. 137. You don't get too much alone time on a submarine with 137 people, right? No. But here they are, sailing around with no means to tell which direction they're moving. So they don't even know where they are, as long as the sun and the stars are not visible. And this has been going on for 14 days. Day 3 was when they started throwing their tackle overboard. Now, I want you to think about what this means. Paul, back in verse 22, he says, "Now I urge you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. For this very night there stood before me an angel of God, to whom I belong and whom I worship. And he said, 'Do not be afraid, Paul, you must stand before Caesar. And behold, God has granted you all those who sail with you. So take heart, for I have faith in God that it will be exactly as I have been told, but we must run aground on some island.'" Now there's the word that God has spoken to Paul. Excuse me. "You're going to get to Rome, I promise that, and God's going to save everybody on the ship." I mean, that's a pretty important message to have from God. Here's my path in life. God's opened it up to me. And Paul says, "I believe it's going to be exactly as God said." But now, here is 11 days later, they're being tossed about by this storm. What might the attitude of some of the sailors be? "Paul, I thought you said we were going to be okay. We were going to survive this. We were going to run aground on some island. But here we are, 11 days later, and we're still being battered by this storm." Now, the point I just want to draw out of this little illustration, folks, is that sometimes faith isn't ignoring evidence, but faith does choose to see things through different lenses. And so while the sailors might be saying, "The storm is still going on, where's your God who told us we're going to be okay?" And Paul could say, "It's been 14 days and we're still alive." So it's the difference between trying to see things in a positive light and trying to see things in a negative light. The old adage, is the cup half full or is it half empty? Or the man who is thrown out into the middle of a giant lake and says, "Well, at least I'm not going to die by burning." Faith chooses to see things with the eyes that God's given us, through the lens of God's Word, applying His promises and His commands to our circumstances. Sometimes if you look through the wrong lenses, it'll look like the circumstances are telling you that God's promise can't happen. But faith says, "I know God's promise is going to happen." What does Hebrews tell us? Faith is the substance of things hoped for. It's the evidence of things not seen. Faith's not irrational. We don't irrationally believe things to be contrary to what they are. But we do choose to believe the promises, even if the circumstances at the moment don't look promising. So here they are, being driven around, 14 days. Now, interesting thing begins to happen here in verse 27. They're being driven across the Adriatic Sea. Now, in our day, we call the Adriatic Sea that region up between Italy and Greece. But in the first century, the Adriatic kind of applied to everything that you see where the big swirly area is at. Yeah. That was called the Adriatic Sea. And farther up north, that narrow strip of water between Italy and Greece was called the Gulf of Adria. And so Luke is speaking with a great deal of understanding of the region here. He says, we're being driven across the Adriatic Sea, and it's about midnight. The sailors suspected that they were nearing land. Now, the only way I can guess that they know this is that sailors are pretty good at knowing what they do. Maybe the sound of the waves was different. Maybe they just could smell it in the air. I'm not exactly sure how they knew, but somehow these experienced sailors knew they're not out in open ocean anymore. They're getting close to land. And so they decide to take an objective measurement, and they measure the depth of the ocean. They took a sounding and found 20 fathoms. Now, taking a sounding would be throwing a weighted line rope over the edge, and it's got knots tied at very regular intervals. And you would count how many knots fall down until that weight hit the bottom of the sea. And so they were able to measure, it says 20 fathoms there. A fathom is about 6 feet. So we're talking about 120 feet deep. A little farther on, they took a sounding again and found 15 fathoms. So we've gone from 120 feet to 90 feet deep. What does that tell you? The ocean's getting shallower. That means we're heading towards ground. Now, it's the middle of the night. What happens if a ship is heading towards land in the middle of the night when you can't see what's happening? Again, days before radar and sonar and lighthouses, and well, I mean, they had lighthouses, but there apparently wasn't one there. You don't want to run aground. You don't want to ground this ship out on rocks that might be near the shore. So they recognize that though it's a good thing we're getting close to land, it's a bad thing to be approaching it at full speed in the dark. And so, verse 29, fearing that we might run on the rocks, they let down 4 anchors from the stern and prayed for day to come. Throwing the anchors out the stern of the ship, which is the back of the ship, by the way. And Dan, I can never keep straight. Starboard? Port? Starboard's the right side, and port's the left side. So if you're facing the front of the ship, which is the bow, starboard's over there, and port's over there. And that would just get deadly confusing to me, because if I turn around and I'm facing the back of the ship, now that's starboard. Yeah, and that's, okay. I don't know. Don't take me sailing. Unless you just want me to sit there and soak up the rays. That'll be fine. All right, so fearing that we might run aground, they let down 4 anchors from the stern. So if you throw the anchors over the back of the boat and the wind's blowing that way, that's going to keep your boat facing downwind, which is a good way to face. If you throw the anchors over the bow of the ship, the wind will eventually pull the ship around and now you're facing backwards. And that would be bad. So they throw the anchors over the back of the ship so that the ship stays pointed with the wind and they'll be able to gain control of it if they need to, but also those anchors are going to stop the ship from being pulled around by the wind any longer so that they don't ground out on any rocks. It says they prayed for day to come. I don't imagine that all of those sailors were believers in a God who is in control of all things. But probably like the people that were with Jonah, they're praying to their various gods for help and protection. But Paul was able to just quietly and confidently know that God had already promised, we're going to survive this. It's going to be okay. We're going to lose the ship, which is a bummer, but everybody else is going to be saved. And so as the sailors were seeking to escape from the ship, now Luke introduces that like we knew it was happening almost. But it's supposed to come as somewhat of a shock to us. That here we are, we're anchored, we're not moving, we're not being driven by the wind anymore. And so what's the answer some of the sailors give? Let's us sneak out. We're going to drop into the little lifeboat and just the few of us are going to make our way to shore. Now what kind of self-serving attitude does that display? The rest of you, we don't care. We're taking the lifeboat, you can all fend for yourselves. But here these sailors take this course. And so in order to get off the ship, I mean, imagine trying to sneak off of a ship with 276 people on it. It'd be awfully hard. It was about as hard as going and talking to Kim's dad and asking her if I could marry her without anybody at Appalachian Bible College learning what I was doing. It just didn't happen. I'll tell you that story sometime. But at any rate, you don't keep secrets in tight-knit communities like this. And so how are these sailors going to get off the boat? They tell the captain, oh, well, we're going to go lower some anchors from the bow, too, and that'll just make us more stable. And Paul gets word of this. They're lowering the boat down into the ocean, in which they will try to get into it and row off to shore here. But Paul, verse 31, says to the centurion and the soldiers, unless these men stay in the ship, you yourselves cannot be saved. Now, he's not talking about eternal salvation here. He's not saying that their relationship with an eternal God somehow hangs on these other people staying in the boat. Understand that not every time the Bible uses the word salvation is it talking about forgiveness of sins and a right relationship with God. He's talking about this promise that everybody will be saved through the storm, that everybody's life will be spared by God. And so Paul lets the centurion and the sailors know that in some way their safety is tied to everybody staying on the boat for the time being. There's going to be a chance to get off, but not until we're ready, not until God has it for us. So he tells the soldiers this, and I love what happens here. Verse 32, do the soldiers believe Paul this time? Absolutely they do. Remember last time Paul gave them advice, what did they do? They ignored him. He said, let's stay in Fair Havens. It's not a good time to travel. And they said, fooey on you, we were leaving. And they left. And then they're in the middle of this storm. Now, Paul says, look, those guys got to stay on the boat. And so what do these overzealous soldiers do? Instead of just making sure the guys stay in the boat, they cut the ropes. And they let the boat fall into the ocean and drift away. Now, don't you think that boat might have been helpful come time to get onto shore? But I find a great example there, because there are times in life when you have to cut away good things. Things that might otherwise be good and helpful, but to you at the moment they're a hindrance, and you got to let them go. Now there's a whole difference. If God has commanded you to keep something, don't ever let it go. But if it looks like it might be a good thing, might be a helpful thing, but it's holding you back in some way, cut it loose. Let it float off, and yes, you're going to get some flack from some other people. But make sure your obedience and your devotion are set to God and what He's commanded. And so here they are, and Paul says, look, our commitment has to be, we're staying on the boat because we believe God's promise that we're going to be saved. These guys aren't going to save their own skins and flaunt God's promise this way. Keep them on the boat. And so there goes the skiff. It floats away. And you say, you know what? We'll cross the bridge of getting to land later. And so it floats away. Now, I imagine those soldiers were not too happy about it. But that's okay. Verse 33, as day was about to dawn, Paul urged them all to take some food. Here again is a fantastic display of faith. Because you're in this storm, your boat's anchored, you're still being beaten and battered. 14 days later, have you ever been in a storm that lasted that long? I don't know how this storm got there. I don't know how many storms last 2 weeks. But it seems like God just parked this storm right over top of Paul for a reason. And it's just sitting there, and it's stirring up the oceans, and it's tossing their boat. Just to accomplish the purposes that God has for Paul. Now, here's the example Paul gives us. His day was about to dawn. Remember, 14 days. They've been tossed around on this boat. Dan, you were on your boat in some rough seas, right? Take you a little while to get used to that. You just went deeper. Well, this boat can't go deeper. I mean, well, it can, but that's a bad thing for a cargo boat to go deep. Okay, I suppose that's looking on the positive side. The boat sinks, and the captain says, well, at least we're not in the waves anymore. All right. How many of you get motion sick? I do, hugely. All right, yeah, I used to love roller coasters, and I just can't ride them anymore. And it's a shame, because I still love going on them, but it just, there was like a switch that turned one day. We went to Hershey Park, and it had only been like 6 months since we had been to an amusement park, and I rode one roller coaster and got off and said, oh, I think I'm done for the day. I can't do that anymore. Yeah. You're on this boat, you're being tossed back and forth. I imagine this boat was not a fun place to be with people being sick. Nobody's eaten in 14 days because they've all given up. What's the point of eating? We're going to die out here anyway. Might as well die on an empty stomach so I'm not vomiting it up all the time. I mean, if I eat, the boat's going to toss us around and I'm going to get sick again. But what does Paul do? He stands up and he says, folks, today is the 14th day that you have continued in suspense and without food, having taken nothing. Therefore, I urge you to take some food, for it'll give you strength. For not a hair is to perish from the head of any of you. He's going to remind them of God's promise again. And if God is telling you that you're going to survive the storm, do you really want to die of starvation? Faith is going to demand some kind of action here, and it is the same for us. Faith without works is dead. That doesn't mean that we earn our forgiveness with God by doing good things. But when He speaks to us and we believe it, that demands action on our part. God has created us as beings that are dependent. We need to breathe, we need to eat, we need to drink water, and we need to sleep. And we die very quickly if we don't do those things. Now, some of that you have a lot of control of, like eating, or at this time of year, with cookies everywhere, you have very little control over it. Breathing kind of happens, and it's really hard to stop. I mean, you can try to hold your breath, but eventually your body will force you to take another one, whether you want to or not. So drinking water, breathing, or eating, you can hold off on those things, but at some point your body is going to start really urging you to take a bite, to drink something. And those are partly our responsibility as people that trust God. When He said, I've given you every tree that is good for food to eat, He's telling us we have a little bit of an area of responsibility in this life to eat and to eat well. To make sure the things we're eating are healthful, and beneficial, and supply nourishment and strength. So in this case, when Paul says, look, I'm reminding you that God said not a hair is going to perish from the head of any of you. God already told us we're going to survive this storm. We're going to be wrecked on an island, so eat something. If you believe God's promise, that means I'm going to act like I'm going to survive this thing, which means eat. Besides, he tells them, we're going to need an awful lot of strength here in the next few hours to get from this boat to that island. And if you don't eat something, your body's not going to have the energy that it needs. Therefore, I urge you, take some food. It'll give you strength, for not a hair is to perish from the head of any of you. And when he had said these things, Paul's not one to just tell people what they should believe and how they should act. He provides an example of it. So what does he himself do? He took bread, and giving thanks to God in the presence of all. And again, I say it's awfully hard to do these things privately on a boat with this many people in this small of a space. So you can be sure that a lot of the people on the boat saw him doing this, take the bread, holding it up, giving thanks to God. Lord, you've supplied our daily need. You've given us a promise. I mean, he probably had to speak loudly to get his volume above the wind and the waves that are crashing around them. But he gives thanks to God for it, and he broke it, and then he began to eat it. You want some? You know, after 14 days, well, you know, maybe that does look pretty good. Paul's example of faithful obedience there, verse 36, has this effect. They were all encouraged, and they ate some food themselves. You don't know who is watching you at any given moment. Sometimes you do, and sometimes you're very aware of it, and you might have this wrestling to say, am I going to do this thing because it might embarrass me a little bit? But God wants us to be that kind of example. To be that kind of lead, to say, you know what, I believe God and I'm going to act like I believe God no matter who's watching, and especially because there are some people watching. So at Christmas time, are we holding up Christmas as the holiday that it's supposed to be? And I'm not saying just put a sign in your yard that says, you know, Christ is the reason for the season. That's a good thing. But do we get caught up in all the other nonsense going on? Are we talking to people about what Christmas is about? I mean, that's kind of a lighthearted side of things at this time of year, but how about some other things? If there's a storm blowing around in your life and you're feeling like you're being tossed by the waves and people look at you, could they see that you're not giving up? You're not acting like, well, I guess I'm just going to die in this storm. Might as well curl up in a ball and sit here on the side of the ship. Or can they see that you're still trying to move forward, you're still trying to say, here's what God's commanded me, here's what I know I'm supposed to do today. I might not have a full understanding of where this storm has blown me and what I'm going to do tomorrow, because, I mean, the soldiers just took my boat away. I can't get from this boat to the shore because the skiff is gone. And I don't know how to solve that problem yet, but you know what? I know that right now God wants me to eat. They were all encouraged and ate some food themselves. And here's where we get the note from Luke. We were in all 276 persons on the ship. Now, you might have a footnote there that there's some differences in different manuscripts, but the real textual evidence says that that number 276 is the right number. There's only a couple of manuscripts that give us a different number. 276 people. Now, think about that responsibility. You have to love Paul because he never wastes an opportunity to be an example of Christ-likeness and godliness to the people he's around. I mean, would you like to be in the storm? Probably not. If I had my druthers, would I choose to be in a storm like this? Not really. But in every circumstance, we find Paul saying, well, if God's going to put me here, I might as well make the use of it. And encouraging 276 people. So verse 38, when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship, throwing out the wheat into the sea. Now here again, they are showing faith in God's commands. Because Paul's already told them, we're going to run aground on some island. Well, there's an island right there. I'm guessing that's the one. So now we've eaten, we've filled ourselves, we're strengthened, and now guess what? We don't need the food. Throw it overboard because now we got to start making preparations for getting this big boat onto shore. Verse 39, so when it was day, they did not recognize the land, meaning the sailors they can't recognize the landscape. It's probably still blowing and very windy and cloudy. They can see the land out there, but nobody quite knows where they are. But they noticed a bay with a beach on which they planned, if possible, to run the ship ashore. Now, I'm going to go ahead just a little bit because chapter 28, verse 1 says we learned that the island was called Malta. We know where Malta is. It's a fairly well-known island. It's a vacation spot. So if you're considering Mediterranean vacations, their biggest export is tourism. Very, very beautiful island. That probably wasn't so beautiful in the middle of this hurricane or whatever it was that was tossing Paul about. But they see a beach, nice white sandy beach, probably a hotel right there behind the beach, and nobody outside. But you can see on this island, on the northwestern corner, two little bays, and it's the southern one there that is traditionally located as St. Paul's Bay. That's probably the bay they're looking at. It says they see a bay, they see a nice beach, and so they decided, if possible, that's where they're going to run the ship aground. Which means we're going to cut off the anchors, we're going to steer right for that place, and we're going to hope we can get this ship as far up on that beach as possible, because guess what? We don't have a boat, a small one. The soldiers made sure of that. So how do we get from the big boat to the shore? Well, if we can get this thing as far up on that beach as possible, we don't have far to swim. So, verse 40, they cast off the anchors. That's where the soldiers should have cut the ropes. And they left them in the sea. So they just, again, they cut the ropes, they let the anchors fall into the sea. Interestingly, archaeologists have found Roman anchors near this area around Malta. We don't know if it's Paul's boat's anchors, but we find some stuff there. They cast off the anchors and they left them at the sea, and at the same time they loosened the ropes that tied the rudders, those big oars on the back of the ship, and then hoisting the foresail, that's the small one on the front of the ship, to the wind, they made for the beach. So they pull up that front sail, which is going to catch just enough of the wind to give them some forward momentum. They cut loose the anchors and they start steering. And your hope, again, is that you just get up enough speed that you can drive that ship onto the shore and have to not have a very long swim. Sounds great, doesn't it? I think it was Dwight Eisenhower that said, planning is essential, but plans are useless. Because nothing ever goes according to plan, does it? Or very rarely. I call it Murphy's Law sometimes. If something can go wrong, it will go wrong. Sometimes we say it's always darkest before the dawn. It always gets harder before it gets easier. I mean, that one doesn't make a whole lot of sense because if it always gets harder before it gets easier, it'd just always be getting harder, and it would never get easier. But that's the gist of it. We know that just when you think you're about to get out of a situation, that's often when the biggest road bump comes in. And here's a road bump. They pick up speed. They start driving in toward the shore. Everybody's waiting with bated breath. How far up on the shore are we going to get? Are we going to be able to just jump out in knee-deep water? We're all going to be okay. And then, boom! Striking a reef, they ran the vessel aground. Right where you don't expect it. And I can imagine everybody just standing there, and all of a sudden they're all laying face forward on the deck. Like, whoa, we didn't expect this. Of course, I don't know, with 276 people standing together, maybe you didn't move at all. It was just like, except the guys on the front of the ship, they fell. They strike a reef, and they ran the vessel aground. The word reef there, Luke uses a word that we're not quite sure what it means. It literally translates a two-sea place, a two-seed place. So it's interesting, the geography there. You can see the northern island of Malta separated from the southern one by a little bit of a gap, and that certainly fits the description of two seas coming together there. Except that Luke seems to focus on this reef. And so we're left a little bit in the dark about what that term means, because it just isn't used very often in ancient literature. So you know, the way you determine the meaning of a word is how it gets used often. So little kids, as they're growing up, they hear my wife pointing at me and saying, "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy." And so eventually Joshy knows, oh, that's Daddy. And at some point down the line, he'll learn, wait, your name's not Daddy? Brian, that sounds so funny. Your name's Daddy. Well, I'm your daddy. Not everybody's daddy. We use words and we learn their meanings by how they're used. But when we run into an ancient word like this that just isn't used that often, we're a little in the dark as to what it means. Except that we know that the ship hit something in the water. Sandbar, a reef, a big rock, something. And the result is the same. Luke tells us the bow struck and remained immovable. So the bow of the ship, which of course was going first, hits this giant whatever it is underwater and is stuck. It's not moving at all. But the waves coming from the ocean behind them keep beating into the back of the boat. Well, what's happening? This thing keeps shifting around. Boats don't like to be stuck on one end and moving on the other. What happens to wood joints like that, Dan? They start opening up. And what happens when you open up the wood joints in the hull of a ship? Water comes in. What happens when you start taking on water in a ship? Did you guys ever take on water in your submarine? It's a bad thing, isn't it? Yeah. Well, when you start breaking up all of those pieces of the ship starts to break apart and it's going to start sinking. That's a bad thing. You didn't get as near the shore as you had hoped. Now you're looking at a pretty intense swim. Good thing you ate some lunch, isn't it? Well, there's never a shortage of people that'll panic in situations like this and start trying to solve problems apart from God's direction. And that's where the soldiers come in again. These same guys that cut loose the boat earlier. The soldiers' plan was to kill the prisoners lest any should swim away and escape. Here's a great idea. Now, we have to have a little bit of slack for these soldiers, because we got to understand their job was to guard prisoners, and if they lose any prisoners, the soldier's life could be forfeit. So they are simply thinking through, my job as a soldier is to make sure none of these prisoners escape, so let's go at it. Before we jump overboard and save our skins, we're going to make sure none of these prisoners escape. We're going to kill them. The centurion, and I forgot to confess this, by the way. I meant to say this at the beginning of our session today, that I think last week I kept using the term commander of 1,000. And that was the wrong term. This guy's a centurion. It's a commander of 100, not a commander of 1,000. Put the decimal in the wrong spot. Centurion, wishing to save Paul, kept them from carrying out their plan. So he hears of it and he says, no, guys, we're not killing anybody, because I don't want you killing him. And we mentioned this last week, that a lot of time God's blessings are poured out on his people and they do spill out on the people around. You are a vehicle of blessing to people that are around you. Just as Abraham and his descendants were a vehicle of blessing to the whole world, we experience blessing as a world because of Abraham and his physical descendants. Absolutely. We experience, especially because Jesus came from Abraham. And the whole world is experiencing some form of blessing because of who Jesus is, whether they believe him or not. And the same thing is true of God's people everywhere. You bring blessing to people. Salt. Make it tasty. So the captain wants to save Paul, so he orders that all of the prisoners are going to be allowed to live, and he ordered those who could swim to jump overboard first and make for the land. So in other words, everybody that's well enough, get over the side of the ship and just start swimming. We've got nothing else that we can do to get us closer to land. The boat is stuck. We've got no lifeboat. There's nothing else to do. Just swim. Swim for it. The rest, verse 44, on planks or on pieces of the ship. So if you're not able to swim, then grab something that floats and start moving that direction. At least in this instance, looking on the positive side of things, you say, which direction are the waves going? Probably towards the shore. So you're going to jump in this rough sea, and at the very least, the ocean's going to help you get up there. It's not always the case, I know, but in this case it was. And so it was that all were brought safely to the land. Now that's a short ending to an amazing episode. Because those few words there tell us that everything came to pass exactly as God told Paul that it would. You're going to lose the ship and all the cargo, but everybody's going to be delivered. Paul, for your sake, I'm sparing the lives of 276 people. Because I have a little detour for you on your path to Rome. Paul didn't know about it until God told him, you know, you're going to be cast away on some island, but he didn't realize what was going to happen on this island. Huge opportunity for ministry here. Paul's going to preach the gospel, and you realize that Malta still is one of the places where Christianity has had its longest impact. Still, churches there. Still, believers there in Malta. And because God drove Paul there with this storm. And sometimes, folks, God is going to redirect the course of your life. You might not like it at first. Because it's not going to be comfortable, and it's not going to be easy, but He is God. He gets to direct where we go. And we can either rage against that, we can either fight against it, we can give up and say, well, we're just going to die because this is so awful, or we can continue to be like Paul, be people of faith, and say, Lord, even if you drive me out in the middle of the ocean, I know you've got something for me to do because I'm still breathing. Okay, I'm not going to die in the ocean. That's fantastic. What else have you got for me to do? I'm going to land on this island. Wonderful. And just keep looking for that next thing that God's going to use you to accomplish in His great purpose and plan for this world. We might not have the impact that Paul had because Paul was set apart for a role that was very particular and very unique in the history of the world as the apostle of the Gentiles. But that doesn't mean you don't have an important an impacting role to play. So living by faith in the midst of a storm. This is a final scene of a pretty dramatic episode. And as we leave them, they're all climbing onto the shore. It's not over yet. More is going to come as we finish out Acts chapter 28 here in the couple of weeks that we have left. But Paul continues to provide us this example of what it means to walk by faith, to obey what God has told you, and to leave what He hasn't told you to Him. So we're going to close this morning. Kim and Dan are going to come, and we're going to sing just one verse of Amazing Grace because it's a verse that really echoes what we've been emphasizing here. I know normally we sing most of the verses of a song, but this one really just focuses in on that point. The Lord has promised good to me. His word my hope secures. He will my shield and portion be as long as life endures. What He's told you, believe. Even if you can't figure out how it's going to work out, that's not always for us to do. Do what you know to do and let Him work out the rest.